So your TV career is going pretty well now.
Oh, well, slowly but surely, I guess. Thank you.
You've been seeing a lot of markets on public access channels, aren't you?
So I'm told we are broadcast in 9 cities from Manhattan all the way to West Hollywood and then north to Seattle and Spokane, Washington.
What's the name of the show, exactly?
The name of the show is The Cutting Edge, and I am a sometime co-host. The regular host is Peggy Kane, but I've been filling in for her. She's been under the weather. The host is Jim Roger. It's been on the air about going on 3 years. And it's an information and talk show that's broadcast every other Saturday, taped at Access Tucson Studios, and also broadcast live on the Internet, www.cuttingedgetelevision.com, or accessible through accesstucson.org. And
yeah, we have a link to that so people can go look at you.
Yeah, thank you. And it's a talk show, an information show that has to do with everything from crop circle research to ancient earth mysteries, earth sciences.
The first time I met you, you were in the technical crew with the DVDs down at the UFO Congress. And come to find out, you've actually had a pretty good career in front of the camera as well as behind. You're a pretty good hostess. I'd like to see you do a regular show on regular television. Who knows?
You know anyone who's hiring?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Jerry.
If you could do that, what kind of show would you do?
Probably the same kind of show that would help educate the public and you know, debunk a lot of stuff. I mean, you know, when you debunk something, you take the bunk out of it, and that's what I really like to do and get to the heart and the science of the matter.
That's good. You ought to stand up and do a lecture about that. That's an interesting little slogan. Take the bunk out of debunk.
Exactly.
I am impressed. Now, you have a history of being interested in this subject, and one of the things I found interesting is your dad. He had some interesting stories to tell. You didn't really want to tell him. You kind of pried them out of him, I think.
Yes. And when I would press him to tell about it, he'd say, I really didn't see very much. But he was a Marine in the 1950s to the early 1961. And originally he was stationed in 1957 in the Nevada test site area. He was part of the procedure called Operation Plumb Bob, where they had all the Marines being exposed to the atomic blasts. And yeah, he was one of the guinea pigs.
They were actually out there on this mesa, and they had the goggles on and all of that.
And the photographic badges that would show how much radiation they were getting exposed to.
Yeah, another kind and gentler move by Uncle Sam.
Well, you got that right. The understatement of the year.
He later passed away from cancer, didn't he?
He recently passed away June 10th from lung cancer and other complications. Basically, his insides turned to jelly. It was horrible. It was really bad.
A tough way to go.
It was.
Well, tell me a little bit about this, what all he saw out there over the time.
In 1957, when he was with the Marines, he was originally stationed at what was called Lake Mead Base, which is now Nellis Air Force Base. And they also had some operations, I guess, in the what's now Groom Lake area. My father had pretty high security clearance at the time, and he was guarding what he described as, he thought they were small children's caskets, like capsulized gray caskets about 5 feet long, and they were sealed, guess hermetically sealed, and they had dials and gauges on them. And at the time, in the 50s, he had never heard of terms like, you know, UFO or flying saucers or whatever, but they, during their free time, just for fun, they would go out in the desert at night and watch different lights and certain kind of really fast flying machines. They didn't know what they were, I guess, and the flying, you know, lights would be blinking at one side of the mountain range, and then they'd disappear, and then seconds later, they'd be at the other end of the mountain range, blinking and doing their thing. And you know, he was guarding these things at the time, and it was either the Secretary of State or Secretary of Defense came down to the site one time and tried to get in and see what he was guarding, and my father couldn't let him in because the man didn't have the proper security clearance.
Now these hermetically sealed caskets that were probably for the size of children, were they inside a secure building or in a certain area? I mean, did he ever tell you?
He didn't couldn't get into too much detail, but they were in a specific area, and I'd sure like to locate them. There is a photograph of my father. It's a postcard photograph that was taken of him and three or four other of his fellow soldiers was taken at the Nevada Club. And I'd love to be able to identify these other gentlemen to see if maybe they could tell me something else further. And there is a date and some signatures on the back of this postcard.
Maybe we can put that picture out on the website.
Oh, that would be nice. Yeah, I have it at home, and it's dated 1957. So.
Well, let's do that. If they do recognize these people or they know something, how would they get in touch with you?
Well, they could contact me by my email address, would be rosefamilybooks@email.com, and that is rosefamilybooks@email.com.
And we have a link to that, your email address, here on this interview, so maybe somebody just click on that and go right to it, and who knows, we may find somebody there. When he got out of the service, those caskets were still there.
I couldn't tell you for sure. I could talk to my mother and see if she was privy to any of the information, because when I would be curious about it and start pressing him for information, he started to say, I didn't see very much, but then...
Now, the first time you and I talked, I think you've had some sightings too, haven't you?
Yes.
I remember in California something happening. You might refresh me a little bit about that.
Those were possible sightings. I had some dreams that were linked to some specific names of aircraft, but I did have a specific sighting in Indiana when I was a kid at an outdoor birthday party, and it was right around 1968. And this was in a town called East Gary, Indiana, which is now Lake Station. Yes, near Chicago. It's in northwest Indiana. Mm-hmm. And this was on Warren Street, where Warren Street and Marquette Road intersect. And I was at an outdoor birthday party. I was probably about, maybe like 8 years old around this time. And there were about four or five other children there, and there was an adult. I was staring down the road toward the railroad tracks, and this is kind of a suburban neighborhood. The homes are very small, like three-bedroom homes, and each home is about maybe 15 feet apart. There's a small driveway, and then there's another house, and the small driveway.
We've all seen housing tracks like that, especially in the Midwest.
Exactly. So there were about six homes down the road were the railroad tracks, and I don't know what made me look at the tracks. There was some distractions going on. One of the children was crying because they wanted the adult chaperone who was there was the grandfather. He was giving bicycle rides to everyone, on his two-wheel, bicycle, and one kid wanted a ride next, and they were crying because they wanted to be the next person. So I took my attention away from this situation and looked straight down the tracks, and a second or two later, I saw this flying craft fly over the railroad tracks, following the railroad tracks. And this flying craft looked like two inverted coffee cup saucers. It was whitish. I would call it like plexiglass material. Mm-hmm. That was my first thought. And the width of it was from one side of the road to the other. I understand the road was probably maybe 16 to 20 feet wide.
But how old were you?
I was about 8 years old. And this thing was flying over the railroad tracks, and I saw it. It was rotating clockwise, and it was wobbling back and forth, left and right, left and right, like listing. And it was leaning forward in the front, kind of down. But the first thing I did when I saw this thing flying over the railroad tracks was I looked underneath it to see if it was on wheels or anything, on the track, and it absolutely was not. It was flying over the tracks, and it was only about maybe 5 or 6 feet above the tracks. And
how fast was it going?
Well,
I mean, you're 8 years old.
I saw it for about 2 seconds, okay. 2 to 2.5 seconds, so I guess you could figure that from the width of the road, and there were homes on either side of the road, so once it flew past one home and across the road, following the railroad tracks, I couldn't see it anymore once it passed the home across the street. But the lights on it, it had orange and green lights on it, orange, green, alternating lights all around the bottom half, the circumference of the...
Sure.
Yes. And they were bright. They weren't blinking or anything. But, I mean, and you know, I saw this as clear as day. There was nothing blocking my way. And there was at least one or two other children that was also facing toward the railroad tracks. So I probably wasn't the only person to have seen it.
But you didn't mention it?
No. You know, when you're a kid and you see things, it's like, oh, you know, no big deal. There it is. There it is. There it goes. And, you know, you just take everything in stride, kind of.
On this new series of TV shows you're doing, any particular show really jump out at you that you've done that you really grabbed your attention?
For The Cutting Edge?
Yes.
Yes, the most recent one was October 22nd, and it had to do with an interview with Freddie Silva that Jim Roger had done and taped at in February at the International UFO Congress Convention at Laughlin. And this interview was interspersed with commentary from Jim and I, and my job that night was to gather actual scientific information about what they call genuine crop circles as opposed to what they call hoax circles, which is, you know, two old drinking buddies with a board in a cornfield.
Yeah, and we just uncovered one of those recently in Wisconsin.
Really?
It made the local papers there and everything, and we sent out Laura Held, who works with us, and she lives in Racine, and a lot of people have been investigating this, and this goes back to what a lot of people talk about when they investigate. Sometimes you overlook the obvious. They couldn't find the wheat field where this happened, even though the picture had been released. And they pulled up to this tavern on Sunday. It was closed, but there was a man out there working on something to do with the tavern. He owned it. And he said his wife was there, too. And Laura said, I'm looking for this crop circle. Do you know anything about it? And the man interrupted the wife before she says, oh, that's so-and-so. Every year it's wife's anniversary. He builds her a little monument to his love with his wheat field.
What a thoughtful man. I mean, yeah.
So there are a lot of man-made, you're absolutely right, crop circles. But Fred, we've had him on before, Freddie, and... It's an interesting fellow. And are you interested in crop circles more than anything else, or just this particular show stands out?
Basically, this particular show stands out because I was able to gather a lot of the scientific data and present that together.
And so what is your opinion after doing a little research?
My opinion is that there seems to be some kind of a microwave technology that's used, which leaves radioactive residue behind, and some of this residue is not from a naturally occurring naturally occurring isotope. It's not in nature. The legitimate, genuine crop circles have also crystalline cellular structural changes in the plants itself, in the soil. The soil can be magnetized. 90% of the crop circles, of the genuine crop circles in southern England, for example, are found over water aquifers. Well, when the genuine crop circles happen, all of a sudden millions of gallons of water are gone from these aquifers. I mean, where does it go? And, you know, the ground around the crop circles would be wet, because, you know, England's damp and rainy and everything. But the inside the genuine crop circle, the ground will be dry. You know, how do you do that? And, I mean, we're talking some of these formations, there are up to 636,000 square feet. And you're talking, you know, Euclidean geometry, 11th level geometry, what they call taking into diatonic ratio, which has to do with musical scale and, you know, advanced stuff.
Is it messages or alien art? Or?
You know, I think it could be just about anything, but what I was thinking was, since some of the crop circles leave behind residue of what are called anions, I guess they're negatively charged ions, it seems to me that there's some kind of something gets recharged from setting on the, from, oh, I don't know, it's kind of hard to explain. It's kind of like recharging whatever is making them.
In other words, they may be drawing up energy from the ground to whatever's making it.
Yes, that's what I think. And there has also been a crop circle where molten iron was found covering the plants. And the plants were not incinerated. And it takes something like 2,700 degrees Fahrenheit to melt iron. I mean, how did this happen? Two guys with a board in a cornfield? I don't think so. You know, and there's also been crop circles and crop designs in trees. You know, how do you do that with a board? That's
It's one of the big riddles, for sure.
And also, too, often with the making of a genuine crop circle, what's been reported is a trilling sound. And I believe Colin Andrews and someone else was able to get this on tape. It was analyzed by NASA Jet Propulsion Labs, and it was found to be artificial in nature between 5.0 and 5.2 kilohertz. And some people came out and says, you know, that's the grasshopper sparrow. No, grasshopper sparrow is found in marshes. You know, you won't find a grasshopper sparrow in a crop field. So.
Good point. I hadn't thought about that.
Yes, and also, too, there was a recent study that was sponsored by Lawrence Rockefeller, and it was carried out by the BLT research team headed by Nancy Talbot, and it had to do with analysis of clay particles from the soil of a genuine crop circle, and they were analyzed and found to have crystalline changes in them, and I can't remember if it was a geologist or I have the name and somewhere else. It's on Freddie Silva's website. You can read all this information, I believe, there. I think it's on Freddie's website. And the geologist was very surprised to find that this kind of soil was found on top.
It should be subsoil.
In subsoil, and it should have been exposed to very high heat, high pressure for thousands of years. And to find this kind of soil on the top was very shocking. And also, too, with the genuine crop circle, they have what are called blown nodes or expulsion nodes, where it seems that the plant has been heated to such a degree that the water inside, I guess, like boils and then blows out from the plant.
Well, you know, you're from Indiana, the Midwest. Crop circles do show up there. But you moved to California, and now you're in Arizona. Any crop circle activity in the West? In the deserts areas, dry Southern California, down to definitely Tucson's fairly dry?
I haven't verified this yet, but I hear there was a crop circle near possibly the Tucson area. I was told to refer to a website, I believe it's cropcirclenews.com, and go to the link that has to do with Arizona and see that, and that was supposed to have been a recent occurrence.
Now, you've been coming to UFO conferences for a long time. Has your interest shifted over the years? And I know 3 or 4 years you've been coming, and probably a long time before I ever arrived on the scene. So, you know, different, like this is a crash retrieval conference, the UFO Congress, they have all kinds of subjects, and you've been to other types of spiritual type meetings, I know. So basically, what has this done to you? In other words, soaking up all this information, where are you going with it? What are you getting ready to, really get involved? We're getting ready. We just signed you up for a national TV show, so we're hoping. So you want to do a show like this. So what I'm getting at is, are we talking about a spiritual realm, or are we talking about extraterrestrials just showing up, or are we talking about time travelers, or are we talking about some mystical thing we don't understand, or all of the above?
Well, I think just about anything is possible, so probably all of the above. My interest has increased tenfold the more scientific information that I learn about listening to people like Jim Mars, Freddie Silva, and those people, Linda Moulton Howe, that deal with scientific information that you can go out and look at, and you know, like evidence. And I've noticed too that with some of the crop circles, there seem to be imprinted after the intent of the researchers. Like the researchers have put out a thought where they want to see a certain kind of crop circle or crop formation, and it happens. And it made me think of the research done by a gentleman named Dr. Masaru Emoto, E-M-O-T-O, who does research on ice crystals, water crystals, and using high-speed photography has shown that our thoughts and intentions directed at certain kinds of water will make it form hexagonal crystals in certain patterns. And if you send thoughts to the water or even put words on the bottle of water that says, like, I hate you, you make me sick, I'm going to kill you, the pattern of the water is very helter-skelter and very unattractive. But with another sample of water from the same source, you put toward its like thoughts like love and gratitude, blessings, thank you, you will develop, I mean, these, you can see this, these beautiful crystals developing in the water.
So what do you think, what do you think the experiment shows, the research shows?
Well, I think that it shows that, well, it has to do...
Is mental, just the mental power of telepathy alone and transferring magnetic or mental energy to people? I mean, is that, and to objects?
Well, that too, and I think it kind of makes me more of the mind that, you know, thoughts are things. They're as real as anything you see around you, but in a different kind of material form. And then you're getting into the realm of certain things like quantum physics, which I guess is what the science of the connection of everything, which our mainstream science is just basically beginning to discover, you know, the power of thought. And Dr. Emoto's research really, really put that home, really, really put it home. And I think there's a connection between crop circle formations and certain things like Dr. Emoto's research.
Well, we're gonna check back with you in February when you're at the UFO Congress. See? Yeah, and we'll see how you followed these. I used to call them theories, but I'm always being corrected as a hypothesis. And so we'll see how the hypothesis works out. It's a joy seeing you again.
Well, thank you, Jerry. It's always good to see you, too. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you.